Well, I want to get my chance to give you a welcome this evening to our service, a very warm welcome. If it's your first time at Amiens Park Chapel, as I say, do please stay if you're able to for pizza and other things. I should be staying for those. But tonight we're going to think about one of those questions which we all ask at various times. Sometimes we ask the question seriously, sometimes not. And the question is this: does life have any meaning? Is this it? What's the point? Have you ever asked that question? And you know what I mean. Life's busy, life's fun, life's miserable, life's boring. But is there any more to life? There's work, money, relationships, holiday, home, food, drink, clothes, sport. But is this what I should be doing? Am I missing something? I get up, I eat breakfast, I go to work, come back, go to the bar, watch TV, go to the bathroom, go to bed, only then to get up and do it all over again. Why? And do I do it until I die? And then what? Do I go to the big mansion in the sky to get up, eat breakfast, watch TV, and do it for all eternity? What am I doing? Is there more to life than the life I'm living? And we feel, don't we, there should be, as it were, a sort of another dimension. That in our lives there's a missing piece. And as we try and plug the gap, well, we're still left with that sense of, I don't know how you describe it, a hunger, a thirst, an aching. Have you ever felt like that? You can be surrounded by friends, you can be alone at 2 in the morning, and there's an empty place in my life which nothing seems to fill. So what's the answer? Maybe there isn't one. And all you touch and all you see is all your life will ever be. Well, come with me to the reading which we had. To the book of Ecclesiastes, it's on page 587. And to the words of the wisest man who ever lived, his name is Solomon. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. And as we look at this chapter, we have three things to say. So three things to say, 3 points. And point number one is just that question: does life have any meaning? Is there an answer? What does Solomon say? Verse 2, he says, "Vanity of vanities," says the preacher, "vanity of vanities, all is vanity." Vanity here means futility. So Solomon, life is like the bursting of a soap bubble. It's transient, ephemeral, futile. Says Solomon, life is a nonsense. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. You could translate it futility of futilities. All is futile. Or meaningless, meaningless. All is meaningless. Or maybe even frustration of frustrations. All is frustration. Says Solomon, life is a waste of time. And if you're standing here, look at you and say, you're a waste of time. There is no point. Well, Solomon, how can you say that? Aren't you a great thinker? Exactly, says Solomon. And I'll give you my reasons. Verse 3. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? When my father died suddenly at the age of 67, he'd barely begun his retirement. I'd watched him. It had been a lifetime of toil and labor. And for what? Work. You're like a hamster on an exercise wheel. So much back-breaking effort and going nowhere. Where's your life going? Verse 4. One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. All the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances. Yes? Generations come, generations go. But nothing ever changes. The stage remains. The earth abides forever. Verse 5, the sun also rises, the sun goes down, and hastens to the place where it arose. Sun rises, sun sets, day follows night, night follows day, but nothing changes. The sun, as it were, it rushes breathless across the sky, only then to have to do it all over again. Just another frustrating day. Nothing accomplished. What's the point? Verse 6, the wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. The wind's constantly moving. It's changing direction. But it never arrives. There's no destination. It's still the wind, isn't it? Blowing from north to south, south to north, east to west, west to east. Look at verse 7, if you have a Bible. Did you ever study the water cycle in geography? All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. It rains. It rains on me. And the rain empties into the river. And the rivers empty into the sea. From where the water evaporates to form clouds, to rain on me all over again. Nothing ever changes. There's so much activity. But nothing is ever accomplished. Doesn't seem to be a point to anything. The sun, the wind, the rain, they seem to go round and round and round in circles, never-ending circles, without ever arriving anywhere. So says Solomon, look around you. Look at the universe. What's the point? Look at verse 8. We too are part of this wearisome cycle. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. Everything seems to take so much effort, doesn't it? And yet we're going nowhere. Verse 8, the eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. We've taken a gap year. Have you seen some wonderful things? But has your eye seen enough? The eye is not satisfied with seeing. Have you downloaded that bit of favourite music, the one you really like? Well, will it be your last download? The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. And you see, Solomon knows what he's talking about. He's a philosopher, naturalist, a teacher, poet, politician, writer, joker, composer, architect. He's the builder of magnificent cities, beautiful gardens. His rule is absolute. He's loved by his people. His wealth is fabulous. Has an annual income of 23 metric tons of gold. He's married to the world's beautiful women. He's got over 300 wives and 700 concubines. That's a different woman for each day for 3 years. In his one lifetime, he's experienced, enjoyed, excelled in what you and I merely dream of. It's as though he's lived 1,000 lives in his one life. One life where all your dreams come true. Solomon has the world at his feet. There's nothing that he doesn't possess. Nothing that he hasn't denied himself. He's done it all. He says over in chapter 2, he says, for what can the man do who succeeds the king? Only what he has already done. Been there, done that, seen that. Done it all, says Solomon. Whatever ambitions you nurse, says Solomon, you'll simply be standing in my shadow. And to cap it all, Solomon's not a fool. He's the wisest man who has ever lived. Now, when people heard of the glory of Solomon's kingdom, they didn't believe it. They said, you're having me on. You're exaggerating. Nothing could be that glorious. They didn't believe it. And then when they saw his kingdom, says the Bible, it took their breath away. And they said, you didn't even tell me the half of it. And yet in spite of all this, Solomon cannot escape the sense of being cheated. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. So Solomon, you can gain the whole world, only to discover that the world is not enough. There's still a hole in my life. Look at verse 9. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. It's the party conference season. Remember the Lib Dems, Labour, Conservatives this coming week. And what do we hear? New initiatives, new laws, new agendas, new reforms. But actually nothing ever changes, does it? We're still facing the same old problems. That which has been is what will be. And if tonight I visited the church of my upbringing, religion, well, there might be a new priest, might be some new faces there, but it'd be the same vestments, same liturgy, same incantations. Has it really made any difference to anyone's life? Well, someone's thinking, this is all a bit cynical. Don't be a cynic. We can all make a difference. What did Gordon Brown say? Don't dream little dreams, dream big dreams. Verse 10. Is there anything of which it may be said, says Solomon, see, this is new. It's already been in ancient times before us. In other words, says Solomon, when you dream your dreams, when you think you're making your mark, you'll actually find that someone's made their mark before you. On the 18th of January 1912, Captain Scott and his team arrived at the South Pole, only to find that the Norwegian Amundsen had got there first. And Scott wrote this in his journal. He said, "It's a terrible disappointment. All the daydreams must go." What are you dreaming of? What are your daydreams? Well, says Solomon, you'll die disappointed. Verse 11, there is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of the things that are to come by those who will come after. So Solomon, the idealism of youth. We all think that we're going to be the first to do something. But that's only because we've forgotten what previous generations have done. They've been there before us. And just as their achievements have been forgotten, so too with all my efforts. Who'll remember me? Who'll remember what I've done when I'm dead and gone? Nothing changes. Nothing's new. It's all a complete waste of time. You get to the end of your life and say, was that it? Was it? Did I miss something? Joni Mitchell sang, "I've looked at life from both sides now, from win and lose, and still somehow, it's life's illusions I recall. I really don't know life at all." Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Life is meaningless. Life is frustrating. I really don't know life at all. You can't make sense of it. There is no answer. Well, somebody's thinking, all right, fair enough. But these words are thousands of years old. Solomon's dead and gone. What about all those people who have come since? Don't we know more today? Aren't we better educated, better equipped to handle these sorts of questions? Well, Solomon knows all about education. He says, verse 12, "I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven." Okay, I gave myself to education, this burdensome task which God has given to the sons of men by which they may be exercised. So Solomon, God has given us minds to use, minds to engage with the big questions, to seek, to question, to search, to understand. But if you think education is the answer, says Solomon, you'll be disappointed. Verse 14, I've seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. At the end of the day, education doesn't answer the real questions of why I'm here, of my existence. You find yourself just simply grasping for the wind. When I was growing up, I used to watch Star Trek. Did you watch Star Trek, or the ones that followed afterwards? You know, Kirk, McCoy, Scotty, Spock. And however bad things got on the Enterprise, there was always an answer. After all, it's the 24th century, and science has shown us the way. But of course, it's science fiction. Verse 15, what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. Problems remain. So many, says Solomon, that you can't number them. Education. Let's not pretend that student unions are the places of harmony, order, and happiness. And will more sex education cut teenage pregnancies and STDs? And will new food and crop technologies stop people from dying from overeating or from starvation? And Solomon, again, he says, I know what I'm talking about. Verse 16, I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness and have gained more wisdom than all who were with me, all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge. I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive this also is grasping for the wind. I've heard some students tonight. You could say Solomon was the perfect student. You'll find him in the library, you'll find him in the bar. You find him at the seminar, you'll find him at the footlights. He's in the study, he's on the sports field. And at the end of it all, he'll walk away with a double first, knowing more than his teachers. But for all that, he still has no answers. Solomon says education is not the answer. Which, of course, is why so many educated people are sad and disappointed. Verse 18, for in much wisdom is much grief. And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. Do you see, the more you know, the more aware you become that you haven't found the answer to life. The more educated you become, the more cynical and sad and miserable you find yourself to be. So does life have any meaning? Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Well, that's the longest point, the next two are quite short. So point number two. What's a book like this doing in the Bible? You know, I went to church tonight to be told life is a waste of time. What's this book doing here? Well, if you read through Ecclesiastes, you'll come across a little phrase 29 times. You've already come across it 3 times in our reading. You just spot it. A little phrase that unlocks the meaning of the book. Did you notice it? What is it? Listen carefully. Verse 3, what profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? Verse 9, and there is nothing new under the sun. Verse 14, I've seen all the works that are done under the sun. Little phrase, 29 times, under the sun. In these despondent verses, Solomon's standpoint is under the sun. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means under the sun. It means seeing things from where I'm standing. Senses, mind, experience, working overtime. Trying to make sense of it all. And it's the standpoint from which God is completely left out. Nothing revealed from above, simply what is seen from below. It's living inside the Dawkins box of what you see and what you touch under the sun. So when you ask the question, does life have any meaning? what's the life worth living, from a purely human standpoint, under the sun, you'll find no satisfying answer, because there is none. Have you seen that? Under the sun, I can see no further than the horizon. And therefore, left to myself, and the little bit of the world I can see, I will never be able to work it out. Solomon's seen much further. He's gone beyond the horizon, and still he hasn't found the answer under the sun. Do you see, this book is here to get you thinking. It's to give, if we've got any of it, our atheistic smugness a really good kicking. It's to make us face up to the real issue. That life without God is utterly, well, it's more than frustrating. Life without God is meaningless. Futile. Which, of course, is why later in the book, when Solomon adopts a new standpoint, that of a man who knows God, only then does he find real answers to the question of existence. So do you see? God has made us so that we cannot find satisfaction in ourselves. As Augustine said, you have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. And so we close our third point. Does life have any meaning? Am I missing something? Is there an answer? Well, Solomon, having stirred up the question, it's to the pages of the New Testament that we turn to find the whole answer. God's final word on the subject. And 1,000 years after Solomon wrote these words, there came another king, another son of David, another preacher, one who was wiser than Solomon, one who was greater than Solomon. Who is he? The Lord Jesus Christ. And though he lived under the sun, he came to reveal things from above. So just listen to what he says. On the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, if anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. Did you hear that? To a thirsty well that has no answers, Jesus says, come. Come to me and drink. And then he says this, he who believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. Says Jesus, come to me. Draw everlasting refreshment from me. Come, experience rivers of living water from me. Extraordinary, isn't it? Have you ever heard the like of it? Are you thirsty? Then says Jesus, come to me and you will never thirst again. Listen to what he says. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Did you hear that? To a weary world, to a frustrated world, to a world that's yet to find the answer, that's yet to find meaning, Jesus says, come, come to me, and I will give you rest. Are you weary? Perhaps you're worn out looking for the answer. Do you feel yourself on that treadmill of life and you're unable to get off? Are you disappointed by this world? Have you yet to find the life worth living? And there's something more, isn't there? Are you weighed down by guilt you know, that sort of personal history which we all have and which we all carry around with us? Have you lived without God? That's why you can't find the answer. Have you played where God has forbidden? And maybe you thought you could get away with it. But it doesn't work out like that, does it? Because deep down inside, we know that beyond this life is the judgment and eternity. And how will I escape? A woman left her husband. She hitched up with another man. Was she happy? No. She said it was guilt that was binding me to him. What could she do? Where could she go? She'd messed up big time. But then she heard the voice of Jesus. Come to me, and I will give you rest. And she came to him, and he lifted the burden. He gave her the calm of sins forgiven. The burden of her guilt was lifted, and he gave her a new power to live by. And she left that man and returned to her husband and found rest. I will give you rest. Are you weighed down with guilt? Things you've done, the person you've been? Then Jesus opens his arms and says, come. Listen to what Jesus says. I have come that they may have life, and they may have it more abundantly, or life to the full. Now, when do you feel alive? Plunging into cold water on a hot day? Love's first kiss? Meeting up with old friends? Or maybe you sit down to your favorite meal on an empty stomach? And you might say, I feel alive. But it never lasts, does it? There's a piece missing. Because lasting satisfaction is only ever found in lasting things. But says Jesus, I give life. Abundant life. Life in all its fullness. Everlasting life. And he fills that empty place until it overflows. So have you worked out who this is? Okay, he's Jesus Christ, but have you worked out who he is, this one who is greater than Solomon? Who is he? Listen again. Jesus said, he who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he who does not take up his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who finds his life will lose it. And he who loses life for my sake will find it. Who is this who claims the throne of your heart? Who is this who claims the love of your soul? Who says, love me with the totality of your being? Do you see who this is? God himself has come down to live under the sun. And Jesus is his name. He is the meaning of life. He is the end of the journey. He is the purpose of my existence. Bow down before him. Love and adore him. His name is wonderful, Jesus the Lord. Well, it's time to finish. The Lord Jesus Christ, he lived under the sun, but he revealed things from above. And supremely he revealed that God is love. This is the God who loves men and women, boys and girls. Haven't we messed up? Haven't we walked out on him? Haven't we sinned? That's why we don't know what life is about and where I'm going and what the point is. Haven't we taken the road to hell? But he so loved a guilty world that he came down from heaven to suffer and bleed and die on a cross. To die the punishing death that sinners deserve to die, so that those who come to him, those who believe in him, should not perish, but they might enjoy everlasting life, life that begins now. This is not about religion. It's an old Negro spiritual. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child a long way from home. Is that how you feel? A motherless child a long way from home. Then says Jesus, take my hand. I've come to find you. Come home. Come to me.